integrity is who you are in the dark.
Yeah.
Like when you're at your most vulnerable moments in life and with all the lights off in the dark, it's just you, your thoughts, your conscience, and God. Who are you really?
Are there different versions of you? Is there a private version of you and a public view? Like if your private moments were put on display, you know, in front of your congregation, or if your private moments were put on display in front of your wife or your parents,
yeah,
like, would you be okay with that? You know, yeah. Or would you say like, oh no, 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 no. Yeah. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Authentic Christian Podcast. I'm Aaron, this is Brandon, this is Cameron, this is Epifanio, and today we're talking about integrity. What does integrity look like? Okay, so in this episode, we're talking about what integrity looks like when it's just you and God. Essentially, the idea of what is integrity? How do we cultivate integrity? What's the difference between integrity and like your reputation? Like you can have a reputation of something good, but your character might be different. And essentially it's this idea of, do you have a version of you that everybody knows is the same version, or do you have a version that nobody knows? So we're talking about integrity today. The way I had to do this lesson at PTP recently, someone at PTP came up to me and they said something like, I listened to the, is this going to, that's what it was. They came up to me after the lesson, like, is this going to be a podcast episode? I said, absolutely. They're like, I noticed when I listen to you speak at PTP, it becomes a podcast episode. I'm like, yeah, I'm not reinventing the wheel. You know? So this lesson that I was assigned is essentially what integrity looks like when it's just you and God. And like, I started out the lesson talking about who knows you better than anybody else. Like, imagine you were on a game show and the game show was, you know, you were the person. And then there was all these different contestants who were like, you know, your significant other, if you're married, your wife or your husband, your best friend, your parents, the elders at your church, you know, your best friends outside of church. Like if all these people were competing and they were going to ask questions about you, who would know you the best? Like who would win? And the whole thing that I was trying to get across is different people many times. It's not the way it ought to be, but sometimes it's the way it is. Different times, many people know different versions of you.
Yeah.
And the idea of integrity, how would you describe the idea of integrity?
Well, I mean, basically integrity is who you are when no one's looking. That's the way we always explain it, right? So when you think about, and I mean, you're going to be, I always say it this way, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
There's no fronting, there's no faking, there's no, I'm not trying to keep up this image, what you see is what you get. And so who you are at all times is how I would define integrity or explain it simply put. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So,
I've heard one person preach a sermon on a similar subject, and he said it this way, very similar to what you said, who you are when nobody is with you is really who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the point. I mean, God sees you at all times, of course, and God knows all things, Hebrews 4:13.
Yeah.
But that's really the idea. The way you live when nobody else is around you, that's really the person you are in the truest sense.
Yeah.
It's crazy because when you think about, like, if you look the word up, you Google it or whatever, you're pretty much going to come up with the same definition. But I just heard one man say it slightly different. He said, integrity is who you are in the dark.
Yeah.
Like when you're at your most vulnerable moments in life and with all the lights off in the dark, it's just you, your thoughts, your conscience, and God. Who are you really? And it's crazy, like, when you think about it, because we live in an age now, especially in entertainment.
Yeah.
If you take the idea or the notion that, you know, we're supposed to be people of integrity, but then, you know, people have alter egos.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of times people like to live up to their alter ego, and that may not necessarily be who they are.
Yeah.
And so that's why integrity is important.
Well, I think what you said is just, I mean, it's so true. Who are you in the dark? And the idea of like when no one's looking.
Yeah.
Like when when you think that everything is private and no one knows what's going on, how do you act?
Yeah.
You know, like, and the thing about it is sometimes if you're not being careful to cultivate the same, sometimes like even the people that are closest to you don't know the true version, you know? I mean, we see this all the time in like news stories or like the Coldplay concert. Remember the Coldplay thing recently?
At the Coldplay concert,
they show this like guy and this woman embracing, and then they basically realize they're on the Jumbotron and she like hides, I think. Yeah. And he like acts like he weren't doing that.
He was like a CEO of a company.
CEO of a big company. Yeah. And she was like an HR. And so what, in those moments, it's like, you know, be sure your sin will find you out.
Oh, yeah.
They thought that they were not alone necessarily, but they didn't think they were going to be seen by the people that they didn't want to see it. So in a sense, they thought they were alone because nobody was paying attention. And then all of a sudden, it's like in a second, when their private life got made public, like see the consequences, like repercussions.
And not just made public, like it went international, worldwide. Like it, it don't get more public than that. Right.
And the thing that I remember thinking too is, I remember thinking, why is our culture so upset? Like our culture all the time says divorce isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
Like adultery is not a big deal.
Yeah.
So to me, it was almost kind of like refreshing. I'm like, I mean, I hope that the reason people were so upset is because they violated a marriage covenant.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because our culture likes to judge other people and not turn the, the lens on themselves. On
them, but even with integrity though, you know, it's wonderful because it's like, we all got a conscience.
Yeah.
And to the, what you're saying, you know, that put in people's conscience, like, they're both wrong in this instance.
Mm-hmm.
And so with integrity, it's like, man, when nobody's around, nobody's watching or whatever, like you and your thoughts, you and your conscience, like, you know, that's something that you got to deal with. And I know we'll talk more about it, but that's the thing, you know, that's kind of at the root of it.
Yeah.
You
know? Well, we were, before we started filming, you know, we were talking about just kind of like what, where we wanted to go with the lesson. I was bringing up how I remember like in college, I didn't want there. I got certain versions, like the version I was with my buddies on the baseball team was different than, I guess, maybe the version like that, you know, like I was sort of afraid that different groups in life that knew me might meet each other. You know, it's like, you've heard like the Catch 22, which is from a movie in the 60s where there was like a, I looked this up cause I was like, what's that from, Catch 22? Do you know? So in the '60s, there was a movie about this like guy, it was a dangerous mission. Fighter pilot had to fly on, like a military pilot. But the way you could get out of the dangerous mission is saying that you were insane. And if you said you were insane, you wouldn't have to go on the mission. But like by saying you were insane, you were sort of showing you weren't insane. You're like, oh, I'm so insane, I can't go on the mission. It's like, that tells me you're sane, you know? Yeah. But the idea is, what would happen? I mean, whoever's watching, think about your own lives. Like, are there different versions of you? Is there a private version of you and a public view? Like if your private moments were put on display, you know, in front of your congregation, or if your private moments were put on display in front of your wife or your parents, like, would you be okay with that? You know, or would you say like, oh, no, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the idea of cultivating, which is the real version of you. Like I saw a movie, I don't know, a year ago where there was, I forget exactly the plot, but it was something like this guy was like a librarian or something. And in this, here's a good analogy. All right, Cars, the movie Cars on Disney. I have little kids. So anybody seen Cars 2?
Yeah.
All right. Cars 2. Here we go.
I've seen it, but it's been a while.
Okay, yeah. Cars 2, Mater, right? Yeah. Mater's a tow truck.
The tow truck.
But he happens to be in the right place at the right time, and they mistake him. These British intelligence agents mistake him for an American spy. So it's Mater is just Mater, but they think he's a spy, right? Now, if Mater was faking being a spy, it'd be like this, oh, he's living a lie. There are movies like this all the time.
Yeah.
And it's like, do we have this in our own lives where we have this secret life? Man, I mean, you see movies, you hear real stories.
Well, Catch Me If You Can. Remember that movie with Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks, Catch Me If You Can? Posing as the pilot.
Yes.
And so,
printing money, and he was doing all these things.
He lived a whole life, but that wasn't who he was, you know?
That was the movie I was thinking about, because earlier, you know, you mentioned about compartmentalizing different aspects of your life. Yeah. And that movie just, that's the, you know, cream de la cream of, you know, what it is to have integrity. Because, man, and he got away with it.
He got away with it.
And you got to, but if you live your life that way, if you start lying about things, you have to remember so much more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to remember like, wait, what did I say in front of this person? Wait, what did I say in front of this person? You know, like that's exhausting to me.
Well, not only is it exhausting, but then you start to become something that you never wanted to become.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you think, well, now this person knows me as this, this person knows me as this, and I have to keep up all these different personalities. There was just, my wife and I were watching this episode of, I think it was SVU or something like that. I think it was SVU.
Okay.
And there was this guy who was a real estate guy, but he worked with investors too, and he was getting different investors to just give him these big checks of money.
Yeah.
And so, but he had like five different aliases. And eventually because he was trying to keep up all these different aliases, what happened was he ended up making a slip. And so all these voices were in his head, and it's like, well, I thought you said your name was this. And so he's caught. And so what does he do? He ends up killing the lady that caught him.
Yeah.
And so now the FBI is trying to chase him down or whatever.
But yeah. I mean, if you have that, that's the opposite of integrity.
Yeah.
Like integrity is being the same person everywhere. And, you know, the Bible shows us that God sees every version of us, right? And he especially knows the fake versions and he knows the real version. Yeah. You know, the person you are in the dark right. when no one else is looking. The verse that comes to my mind is 1 Samuel 16:7. Yeah. And this is essentially brought up to Samuel when God is sending Samuel to anoint David. And Samuel basically looks at David's brothers and essentially says, like, the biggest brother's not the one you want. Anyway, the context of the statement, 1 Samuel 16:7, the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or physical stature because I've refused him. For the Lord, here's the key. The Lord does not see as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.
Yep.
And so with integrity, what we're going to be discussing today is, you know, God sees your heart. People at church see how you act and dress for a few hours. God sees you all day, every day.
Absolutely.
You know,
made me think about also David, but a negative example in 2 Samuel 11, you know, after he commits the sin with Bathsheba.
Yeah.
That whole chapter basically is about him covering up his sin, everything he has done. But despite all of that, he goes through all that trouble to hide his sin. 2 Samuel 11:27 still says the thing David had done displeased the Lord.
Yeah.
And so it's the idea we can hide our sins sometimes from men, but like you say, God knows, like mm-hmm. he sees the heart. He knows everything we do. And despite all of David's efforts, God still knew the truth.
Yeah.
And it's the same for us today.
And look at the consequences. Cause I forget exactly the wording. I don't know if it's in that chapter. What is the wording where it basically says you did this thing secretly? But your son Absalom,
that's in chapter 12.
Chapter 12. Yeah, chapter like you 12. Did this thing. Is it Nathan that says that
mm-hmm.
you did this thing secretly?
Because Nathan goes back and tells him, you know, the sword should never depart from that house.
Yeah.
And as a result
we'll
of
never
that,
never have peace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Second Samuel 12:12, for you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel, before the sun.
Man.
Yeah. So he did it secretly because he thought he'd get away with it.
Right.
Yeah.
And he didn't. And God saw it the whole time, and God basically exposed his sin through Nathan. And look at the consequences. You know, somebody said once, like, you know, David, that sin was so awful, he lost one son. Speaking of the unborn, the baby.
Oh, no, he lost more than that.
Yeah, he lost a bunch of sons. Yeah,
he lost more because than
his
of that.
Whole but you think about the turmoil that was in his family
from
that moment on all the way. And that's what God says. But this is the consequence. Mm-hmm. Think about his son and then, you know, what he did to his daughter right. and then the brothers, you know. Fire. And so it was like all of that turmoil in that family, man.
And as you go into that, I'm thinking about, so you mentioned 1 Samuel 16:7 and you mentioned 2 Samuel 11.
Mm-hmm.
But at the base of just when you're thinking about integrity, basically it kind of come down to practically your relationship with God because God sees and he knows everything. Hebrews 4:12.
Yeah.
For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharpening into his sword, piercing to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit. And joints and marrow, and it's a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. So basically, the idea of understanding, like, God sees not only our every action, but at the very core of who we are,
mm-hmm.
he knows who we are. And I'm thinking about one time I was talking to you mentioned earlier about your dad being a lawyer.
Yeah.
We had a brother at the congregation in Alabama where I preached at. He was a lawyer.
Yeah.
He said, one of the hardest things to prove in a court of law is motive.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, how do you prove motive in a court of law?
Yeah.
And he said, that verse shows that God even knows your motives.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was like, that's scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you really think about it.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus in the flesh knew their thoughts.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
John 2:29, or 24, 25.
I mean, the fact that God knows what you think. I forget this story. You guys have probably heard. Okay. I looked it up. Not only did David lose the baby, he also, because of his sin, lost Amnon, Absalom, and Adonijah. So he lost soul of at least four sons.
Yeah. And then the fact that...
And his daughter? Oh, man. Yeah. His whole life.
And then Uriah, you know, Uriah was one of his mighty men.
So I know.
23:39. He's like, he knew him.
Yeah.
Well, when you think about all this, it's always going to, we're talking about as far as you telling lies to cover up integrity and you lack the lack thereof, but it also leads to hypocrisy. And this is Matthew chapter 15, right? These people draw near to me with their mouth, but they're what?
Heart.
But their hearts, they honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me, mm-hmm. right? It's like, so what's the true definition of somebody who's a hypocrite? It's an actor.
Yeah.
You're acting one way, but secretly inside, like, you're full of dead man's bones.
Yeah.
He's telling you know what I mean? So it's like, you want the world to see you this way, well, you lack integrity because really deep down inside, you're what? Full of dead man's bones. And so I mean, lack of integrity leads to hypocrisy because you're just acting. But God sees the true self.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And a lot of times.
Well, I was just going to say real quick, you know, when you live that way too, if you try and be the Christian on Sunday and live like the world the rest of the week, even though you may fool some people, it's going to hurt the church. Yeah. And, you know, I think about people often say the church, I won't go there because it's full of hypocrites, like you mentioned. And I do think oftentimes that's an excuse, but we should never, I've heard someone say it this way, you should never put bullets in the devil's gun. And the point is, don't give people a reason to make accusation. Yeah. And if you're trying to be hypocritical and you're trying to say, I live for God, but you don't have the integrity, you don't really live like it, it's going to hurt the church one way or the other.
Well, I mean, think about the church of Laodicea. He said, you're neither hot nor cold. You make me sick.
Yep.
And my thing is like, if someone's on fire for the Lord, that's a great representation. Mm-hmm. If they're cold, it's like, I mean, no one even thinks, you know, if someone's like, yeah, I mean, I don't even really go to church. Okay. Well, you're not really reflecting poorly, but if you're lukewarm, it's almost this idea of, you know, I'm a Christian, but I don't live like it. Yeah. Right. I remember reading a book. I can't remember. I've tried to find this quote. I can't find it. But it was an atheist. I think it was like one of the world's most famous atheists in the last, you know, there's a bunch of them, but said something to the effect of the thing that made him an atheist was not an argument. It wasn't a scientific argument. It was his parents claiming to be Christians and it making no effect on their life whatsoever. Mm-hmm. He basically said, my parents claimed to be Christians and didn't change their life whatsoever. Therefore, I assumed it wasn't true.
But you know, at the very center of everything is, that's the reason why integrity is so important.
Because,
you know, we're talking about people, I think Epifania mentioned, like, Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can. If you watch that movie, it's actually really funny.
It's funny.
That dude, he pulled it off.
Frank Abagnale, right?
And different areas of his life, flying a plane, being a doctor, whatever he was doing. But when you strip all of that away, and when he gets discovered, you know, and whenever people get discovered, you know, having these different alter egos and different personality, different you know, aliases and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What do they have to go back to?
Yeah.
Integrity.
Yeah.
Integrity. They got to face themselves in the mirror and be like, you know what? This is not who I am.
Yeah.
I'm portraying an image, but I really need to get back to who I really am as a person.
Yeah.
So it's like, even with all of that, you still got to go back to integrity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, at the same time, if you're someone who is cultivating integrity, God sees the secret things. He also sees the good things. You know, if you're someone who's, you know, helping the needy, you know, or, you know, helping the poor or people in your life. You know, my dad always taught me growing up. I don't remember exactly how he worded it, but what I took away from it was your true character or integrity is how you treat people that can do nothing for you. Mm-hmm. And what he meant by that is, I remember the example that I believe he used was at school. I remember him telling me, like, your integrity is not based on how you treat the popular kids. Like, your integrity is based on how you treat, like, the janitor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I remember at school, everybody made fun of the janitor, you know? It's like, now looking as an adult, it's like, that's probably one of the hardest working guys out of school, you know? But I remember just being young, my dad said, like, a lot of people will treat people in their lives who are wealthy or who have influence and power. Like, they'll be super, you know,
nice to them
because they're thinking, this is what I can get from it. But where your true character is how you treat someone who can do nothing for you. In fact, I can't remember where it is in the Gospels. Maybe you guys remember where Jesus basically said, if you throw a feast, like, don't invite the
rich. Friends only?
Yeah. Don't invite your friends. Don't invite the rich. It's like, invite the poor, the maimed,
right,
those who cannot. Because it says they can't give anything back to you in this life, but your Father will repay you.
Yeah.
You know, when you lend, don't expect something in return.
Yeah. Well, I went to Matthew 5, right? Because that's basically what he says in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus says, for if you love those who love you, what reward have you?
Yeah.
Right? You're not even the tax collectors do the same.
Right.
He says, if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do the same.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, we want to get patted on our back sometimes for doing what, for loving those who love us and doing nice to those who are nice to us. But it's like Jesus says, you have to love your enemies.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about this yesterday, counterintuitive.
And I think, isn't that right after that where it says, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect.
Verse 48 says, therefore you shall be perfect just as your Father in heaven is perfect.
Yeah, and in context, what does it mean being perfect in that context?
Spiritually mature.
And what's spiritual maturity? It's not just doing good to people who love you and can
it's
do something for
you. It's doing good to people who hate you.
That's right.
Who God despitefully use you.
God sends the rain on the just and the unjust.
Right.
If you want to be like your Father in heaven, you do good to people that curse you.
Yeah.
You do good to people who don't do good to you. Like, that's mature, perfect love.
That's counterintuitive. I mean, you know, people are probably going to watch it like, how do you expect us to do something like that? Well, First of all, I would say integrity. It's not us.
That's right.
But it's integrity.
Yeah.
But it's not us who's expecting you to do this.
That's right.
Christ said this.
Because you're modeling him.
Yeah.
Like how could I pray for someone who spitefully uses me? It's like, look at what Jesus did.
Yeah. You know? And the thing about integrity too, there is, if you think about this verse in light of what we're saying about integrity, 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul says, be ye followers of me, even as I am of Christ.
Yeah.
So if we think about integrity with that verse, Paul knew that he could be accountable to Christ and expect others to follow him as long as he followed Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're not being who you're really supposed to be in terms of your behavior, the demeanor, your attitude, mm-hmm. your character, mm-hmm. you can't expect people to follow you.
Yeah.
And so Paul knew that, and that's why he said, you follow me as long as I follow Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the thing about integrity is, it's like, man, it's going to hold you accountable to do what's right.
Yeah.
At all times of your life.
Yeah.
So, I think anybody who can make that statement truly, like, that's integrity.
Yeah.
If you can really say, really and truly, follow me as I follow Christ, that's a person of integrity.
Yeah.
But I like the idea. You know, I thought about, as you were talking, the judgment day. We think about judgment often as a scary thing, but to God's faithful, it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, what's the song? There's a great day coming. It's the same thing with the subject. You know, integrity, it can be scary if you're not living like you should, if you're not living righteously. But if you're living right, it's that idea of even the things you do in private, every prayer you prayed, every song you've sung, every passage you've read, when you're struggling, but you keep fighting, mm-hmm. God sees it all. Mm-hmm. And I know we've talked before, and I'm sure he's going to come up as we were preparing. We talked about Joseph. Mm-hmm. Think about, like, Joseph as he's in prison, as he's struggling. You know, we don't read about all his struggles, but I'm sure Joseph, being like any man, he had times of doubt. He was struggling, but God saw him through. And God saw what he was going through. Yeah. And if we stay faithful to God, God sees our struggles, but he also sees our faithfulness.
Did you make this point earlier? Because I know you were talking about a contrast between character and integrity.
Yeah.
If character is the overall, if you will, integrity is what you add to your character.
Sure.
Am I understanding that right?
I don't know if I said that, but sounds good.
Is that safe to say? Do we agree with that?
I think the other layer was reputation.
Reputation, right? Yeah. But you add integrity, well, for your reputation, but it's to your character. And the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because one of my instructors said something that, as a young Christian or somebody who's, as a young preacher, you're trying to understand yourself, right? All of us are trying to understand who we are in a broad sense, right? It's like, I know who I want to be.
Yeah.
Now, in order for you to be a good preacher, you must first be a good man, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And so, but it's like, God understands who I'm going to be. Mm-hmm. We look at who we are now. You talk about how God views us, right? God sees our hearts, right? You think about Peter when Peter was 40 versus Peter when he's 80.
Yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
The impetuous, the impulsiveness, the you know, it's like, yeah, did he always do it the right way even in his older age? No. But what's happening over time is that God is developing his character.
Yeah.
And one of the ways to develop our character, to add the things that God says add, we're talking about the Christian virtues, right? The fruit of the Spirit.
Yeah.
So we add these things to us, and then who you are now, it's not necessarily who you are going to be, but that goes both ways.
Yeah.
I can swing this way and be what God needs me to be, but life is going to determine whether I'm drawing closer or I'm drawing further away.
Yeah.
When you think about, like, even when you look at Cornelius, Acts chapter 10, when you get to Acts 10, verse 22, the servants who went down with to Peter's house, they said, you know, he's a just man, he fears God.
Mm-hmm.
But earlier in verse 1, you know, what inspiration says about him, he's a certain man, he's devout,
he fears
God, he prays, you know. And so it's like, this is God saying, this is who he really is as a person.
Yeah.
And he's a prime candidate for the gospel, because at the core of who Cornelius is, he's a very good man.
Yeah.
He just needs to be taught the gospel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, go ahead.
I was going to say, Acts 4, it says about Barnabas, he was a good man. And I taught on that recently, and I was thinking, how amazing is that? That the Holy Spirit inspired, I guess it's Luke, to write, this is a good man.
Yeah.
That's amazing to think about.
Yeah.
Was it Acts 6 where it talks about the men that are full of the Spirit? But I mean, the characteristics, right? Talk about the deacons, if you will, right? Philip being part of that, Stephen.
Yeah.
And so it's like, there's qualifications to who we are as Christians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have to be able to exemplify that.
But when that speaks to, because even when we talk about the qualification for elders and deacons.
Blameless is one of them.
Blameless. Oh, that's just, that's integrity. But, you know, a lot of times, like, when you're going through the process of even having a conversation about elders and deacons, people like, you know, like, man, do they got to meet all the qualifications? Like, I mean, do they got to be perfect? Because I think we mentioned earlier about, you know, the word perfect in Matthew 5. Yeah. But the qualifications are there, man, because at the end of the day, those are just who you should be as a Christian man.
Yeah.
And, like, it's not like you got to go and get, it's like you don't go to school, you know, elder qualifications. No, you
it's like those are the aspirations. Those should be the aspirations for every young Christian man. Absolutely.
So,
Acts 6:3 was the good reputation. Sorry, it was the good reputation. The men of good reputation. That's what I was pointing out to. But, sorry.
You know, I think Proverbs 22:1 maybe says, touch with the value of a good name.
Yeah.
You know, but the other thing too is if someone's out there is watching and you're like, I know I need to work on this, I'm struggling with it, God wants the real version of you to be transformed. God knows your imperfections.
Yeah.
You know, God loves you. God loves you in your worst version. Maybe your worst version is the private. That's normally how it is. Normally the worst version of someone is their private version. Because if it's a Christian, because Christians are trying to be transformed and they know publicly, you know, like if I'm struggling with something, I'm not going to like telegraph it to you guys unless I'm confessing it. Like, hey, I need some strength here. Right. Most people keep their private things private because they're afraid. And we talked about in the last episode or one of the episodes about how the devil wants you to keep things you struggle with private because he wants you to think nobody else struggles with it. Whereas if you actually let it out, bring it into the light, it's when other Christian brothers and sisters can help you with it. But the idea is integrity means being the same place everywhere and you're not pretending to be, you know, a different version. You know,
there's a verse, Proverbs 11:3, I think it is. It says, the integrity of the upright shall guide them.
Hmm.
And the perversions of the sinner shall trouble them. But the idea is he's already upright.
Yeah.
They already righteous. And so basically he's going to be the same righteous person in every scenario, every place, at every time. And that's how he's going to continue to lead his or her life. And so the thing about integrity is, as we kind of said, kind of in a nutshell, is that, man, you're going to be consistent. There's a level of consistency, whether in public or in private, with the world, with Christians, you're going to be the same person. I sometimes say, and I've preached on it, I said, you know, at some point as Christians, we just have to get comfortable being Christians.
Yeah.
Like when you think about Daniel and his friends in Babylon.
So we're talking about earlier,
man,
right?
They were okay.
Yeah.
Standing out from the rest of the pagans and the unbelievers in Babylon because they were comfortable with their relationship with God.
I love the way you said that, because think about it. What is, like, I'm thinking about my own life when I was younger, you know, when I'm in high school and college, what is the reason I did some of the things that I did? I wanted to be accepted by the world.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to stand out. And I guess now at the age that I am, I joke, like, I don't really care if anybody likes me. Like, I have a wife and my kids and they love me. Like, I don't mean, like, I want people to like me, but I don't want people to like me more than I want to be faithful to God. Right? So what you said is perfect. They were comfortable standing out as Christians because they cared more about God than they did about what other people thought about him.
Right.
And that's really the idea of peer pressure. Hey, everybody, thanks for watching the Authentic Christian Podcast. If you like this show and you want to watch other shows like this, go to your app store, download the Gospel Broadcasting Network app on your phone, your tablet. You can also get it on Apple TV or Roku. And we have thousands of videos, everything from podcasts to sermons, all the way down to verse-by-verse studies through almost every book of the Bible. And if you like to read, we have a library of hundreds of books. I think it's over 300 or 400 books now that you can read for free on all kinds of different topics. Some are commentaries, lots of material to help you grow in your faith. So head over to the App Store, download the Gospel Broadcasting Network app, and we hope it helps you grow in your faith towards the Lord. Thanks for watching. And you mentioned Joseph earlier. Let's go talk about Joseph. Like, because if you're watching this and you're saying, how do I model this? The best way I've ever been able to model any characteristic in my life is to look at people in the Bible who exemplified it and almost ask myself, you know, of course I got the, what would Jesus do? But like you think when you're in a situation where someone asks you to compromise, if you think back to people like Joseph, like, well, Joseph was in a similar situation. Joseph was alone and he was tempted. And how did he respond?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is an example of integrity.
And I think another commonality between Daniel and Joseph.
Oh, yeah, Daniel.
they were young men.
Yes, young men. Yeah.
So it's possible. It's very, you know, it's very real and very possible that, you know, if you're watching this, you know, as a, even as a young Christian,
yeah.
you know, developing in your faith,
yeah.
like you can begin to start thinking yeah. about integrity and working towards being a man, a woman of integrity.
You know, yeah. I, like Daniel, I've taught through the book of Daniel, and I forget the numbers exactly. I could probably look at my Bible. I'm sure I have it written down. Like when Daniel gets thrown into the lion's den in Daniel 6, I mean, he's older.
Right,
seven. I think conservative estimates say 80 years old.
Okay,
but when they got to Babylon,
yeah, right. that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so when I think of like Daniel in the lion's den,
yeah.
sometimes it's portrayed as like, you know, he's younger, but he may have been 70 material. Or 80. Yeah. I could easily see like some of the elders where we go. I could easily see them saying, "No, I'm going to do the right thing no matter what." But what is more fascinating to me is, yeah, when Daniel and Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael go to Babylon. Yeah. They're probably 15, 16, 17.
Teenagers, yeah.
And Joseph, I mean, go to Genesis 37.
Yeah.
In Genesis 37, he ends up at Egypt and he is 17 years old.
Yep.
And he's far from home. Think about this too, if you're like a teenager. Joseph's far from home. His dad wasn't around. His dad wasn't checking on him. You know, when I was in my, I've told this in the podcast. I wonder if my dad ever gets sick of hearing these stories when he watches, listens, but like Sunday afternoons, my dad would call me like 1 o'clock and be like, "Hey son, like how was your day Sunday afternoon?" I'm like, "It was good, dad. I went to church." You know, like I was 6 hours away, but he would just call and check on me, you know? And it's like, I know he wanted to talk to me and probably missed our Sunday afternoons together, but there was that sense of, I knew on Sunday morning I needed to go to worship because my dad was probably going to call. And I'm thankful that he did that, right?
Yeah.
But Joseph's in a foreign country. Like you said earlier, Egypt is like the world, the worldliest place that probably existed at that time. Everything he could have done, everything he could have wanted, nobody looking at him. And yet, let's read Genesis 39. Someone want to read Genesis 39? Read like verses, I don't know, 1 through 9, I guess. Just Genesis 39, 1 through 9.
I got it.
Okay.
"Now Joseph had been brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard, an Egyptian, had bought him from the Ishmaelites, who had brought him down there." Verse 2. "The Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in the sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. From the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. The blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in house and field. So he left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said to his master's wife, 'Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you. Because you are his wife, how then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?'"
Yeah, notice he didn't say, "How could I sin against Potiphar?" or "How could I sin against you?" Like all those things were true, but that's integrity. Mm-hmm. He knows he could have gotten away with it. His dad wasn't watching. You know, his community wasn't watching. Right. Nobody close to him, his elders weren't going to know. And yet he recognizes all sin is ultimately against who?
Against God.
And it wasn't a one-time thing. Like if you look at verse 10, "So it was, she spoke to Joseph day by day."
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing.
It happened constantly.
Constantly. He did not heed to her to lie with her or to be with her. What does that mean? He wouldn't lie with her or be with her. I mean, maybe.
In her presence, near her?
That's maybe? What I think. Yeah. I mean.
Stay away from her.
Maybe a Hebrew scholar can say, no, that's Hebrew parallelism, but that's like not how the type of narrative is written. Like it's. Wouldn't lie with her or be with her. Yeah. I think of like the Mike Pence rule. He didn't want to be alone with her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Literally, you know, when you read 1 Corinthians 6, you know, Paul talks about flee fornication.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He literally fled
living fornication. Illustration.
Don't put yourself in that position.
Yeah. Right. Joseph was not in the room with, Joseph was not saying like, well, of course I'm not going to sleep with her, but I'm going to like hang out with her. I mean, come on. She is the boss's wife. Like, I don't want to upset him.
Should be alone.
No, he is like, I don't even want to be in the same room. And look at verse 11. It happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work and none of the men of the house was inside. Mm-hmm. I wonder why.
Yeah.
Like, I would not be surprised. I don't think this is the first time she did this.
Well, I mean, you think about he recognized he still has to work.
Yeah.
Like he know he has to work for Potiphar.
Yeah.
But Potiphar's wife is casting, you know, longing eyes at him. She wants to sleep with him. And the thing that you really respect about Joseph, you know, he tried to balance. I got to go to work. This is a delicate situation. I can't not work.
Yeah.
But what I can do is do the right thing.
Do the right thing. Yeah. And then it says none of the men of the house were inside. Like, I mean, maybe it's a coincidence. Maybe I have written in my Bible, maybe she dismissed him. I mean, was she trying to basically set up? I'm starting to speculate at this point, but it's not too far to think she's trying to do whatever she can because she can't have Joseph. Yeah. And what happens when someone can't have what they can't have? A lot of times they want it more. Yeah. And so Joseph, like you said, has the integrity to know it's against God.
Right.
He repeatedly refuses it. He continues to do his work. And then finally, she grabs his clothes and says, lie with me. And he literally fled sexual immorality. He runs out of the house. So it was verse 13, when she saw he had left his garment and fled outside, then she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, he brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. He came in to lie with me and cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard I lifted my voice, he left his garment and ran. So she kept the garment until Potiphar came home. She spoke to him with words like these, the Hebrew servant whom you brought came into me to mock me. So basically she says, Joseph tried to rape me. If I'm allowed to say that word yet, demonetized, right? We're not monetized, I don't think. Anyway, but she tries to force herself, right, on him. And what happens? He shows integrity, but number two, Joseph shows us that doing the right thing doesn't make life easier.
That's right. Make it better. Yeah.
It doesn't make it easier. Yeah. He did the right thing. She still lies about it. This is where you have integrity and reputation are two different things.
Yep.
It is good to have a good reputation. Yep. You want to strive for a good reputation. Yep. But if somebody slanders your reputation and everyone else thinks that your reputation's been slandered and destroyed, remember one person, maybe more, but one person knows
the truth.
Yep. And that's God.
Yeah.
And so Joseph's punished for something he didn't even do.
And you just mentioned, even with integrity, you know, because I think sometimes in the back of people's mind, they feel like if I do right, you know, things will get better. There's a reward. That's not always the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we see in Joseph's life, it actually got worse.
Way worse. Better.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like there may be a reward, but it may not be immediate.
Yeah.
And so, man, he's thrown into prison.
Yeah.
Abandoned in prison, forgotten about, you know what I'm saying? So it's just like, so regardless if there is in the back of a person's mind, hey, I'm just going to do right because God is going to bless me. Yeah. He's going to reward me. That may not be the case.
Well, think about, he could have reasoned like some people reason. Well, like, I don't want to go to jail. Like, I know this is wrong to do, but like, I don't want to face these consequences. Therefore, I'm going to give in to this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I can't remember. I remember a member of the church telling this story. I don't know if it was a member of the church or if it was in a movie. Anyway, I'll tell the story. I think it was a member of the church. Maybe it's in a famous movie and I just forgot. But there was somebody, they wanted him to cook the books, basically. They wanted him to lie about, you know, the numbers, the money at a company. Mm-hmm. And the person refused to do it. He said, I can't do that. It would be a sin. Mm-hmm. And they ended up, it was a test and he got a promotion.
Wow.
Right? That's not how it normally goes.
Right.
How it normally goes is in these situations, it may be at school and your friend asks you to cheat. Yeah. You know, it may be your significant other. You get alone with your boyfriend, girlfriend, and they say, like, no one's going to know. Like, you know, we can do this. No, we're not going to get in trouble. It's going to be fine. Yeah. Like all those things test your integrity. And Joseph shows us he did the right thing because he knew it was the right thing to do. I've said this in so many episodes. There was a banner in my high school as you come down the stairs right next to the 10th grade class and you go towards the cafeteria. And it said, doing the right thing is not always easy, but it's always the right thing.
Right.
Like Joseph got that.
Yeah.
Joseph knew that doing the right thing is always the right thing, even if it causes you problems. And for Joseph, what happened? It caused him problems. He got sent to what?
Yeah, he was in the prison.
Prison. And even in prison, he was what?
Faithful. Still doing right.
He was faithful. Yeah. He said, I'm going to do the right thing no matter what. Because I can't sin against God. And whatever comes in life, so what?
I love, too, that he says, the statement he makes, like you pointed out, it's not just this, like in a sense, you could say, yes, it's a sin against Potiphar, but yeah, he realizes bigger picture, it's against God. But I also love the fact that he calls it, what is it? Great wickedness is what he says.
Yeah.
How can I commit this great wickedness? And I think if we're really going to be right and live right and live lives of integrity, mm-hmm. we have to see sin for what it really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, our world downplays it so much, and we'll come up with different terms to call it. We'll redefine it. Mm-hmm. But Joseph understood this is great wickedness against my creator.
Yeah.
And it was the late Wendell Winkler who said something to the effect of, he believes if he were the only person who had ever sinned or the only person God created, something to that effect, that Jesus still would have died for him. And so I think one of the ways we live lives proper in God's sight and abstain from sin is to remember the consequence.
Yeah.
I mean, the wages of sin is death, yes, but also Jesus died for this.
Yeah.
And so it's great wickedness. And I love the fact, like you said too, you know, doing right is not always advantageous.
Yeah.
I think about the rich young ruler in, what is it, Mark 10, Matthew 19 also.
Matthew 19, yeah.
So getting rid of everything he had in a very real sense, that was not physically advantageous for him to do, yeah. but it was still the right thing to do
yeah.
for his
yeah.
soul.
Yeah.
And so doing right, it's not always going to profit you like the world may say, but you're thinking about a bigger picture there and now and not, well, there and then and not here and now.
Well, and here's something for us to understand. So for like anybody who's watching this, this is one thing that you can take to the bank. This is one thing that can give you comfort and assurance. You know that the person of integrity will dwell with God.
Yeah.
And I'm reminded of Psalm 15. If you want to go to Psalm 15 for just a second, because it's a Psalm of David, and I call this the Psalm of Integrity because it's so powerful. It's only five verses, but, and I'm going to read from the New American Standard 95 version, right? But because the word integrity is in there.
Okay.
But notice what David says in Psalm 15, starting at verse 1. He says, "Oh Lord, who may abide in your tent? Who may dwell on your holy hill?" So who's going to dwell with God? Who's in your presence? Now notice what he says. This is going to be the person. "He who walks with integrity and works righteousness and speaks truth in his heart. He does not slander with his tongue, nor does evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend." That's Joseph. Think about Potiphar. He didn't do evil to his neighbor. He didn't take reproach against his friend. "And whose eyes a reprobate is despised. But who honors those who fear the Lord? He swears to his own hurt and does not change. He does not put out his money at interest, nor does he take a bribe against the innocent. He who does these things," now notice this, mm-hmm. "will never be shaken
mm-hmm.
or stand strong." You talk about integrity. Integrity gives you that which you need so that you can stand strong in the face of danger.
Hmm.
And so I love this psalm for integrity.
And even when you think about like just the gist or the background of the First Peter.
I mean,
basically, in the face of danger, in the face of temptation, in the face of trials, tribulations, Peter is still admonishing and encouraging Christians to do what's right. That's why he says in, I think, 1 Peter 4:15, you know, "Let none of you suffer as a murderer."
He's an evildoer, right?
Evildoer or mm-hmm. busybody in other men's matter. Mm-hmm. But if you want to suffer,
let him suffer as a Christian.
As a Christian.
Mm-hmm. So, let him not be ashamed.
So, absolutely. So the idea is that the Christian life is the best life.
Yeah.
It's the right life to live, right life to have. But like you said, it may not always be advantageous to make those right decisions that relate to being a person of integrity. But
yeah.
the reward
yeah.
is far better when it's all said and done.
Well, I mean, think about Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, which, you know, we know him as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Yeah.
When they were, and everyone bowed before the statue in Daniel 3.
Daniel 3.
They said no. And Nebuchadnezzar calls them up there. And I love what they say because they essentially say, "Hey, look, our God's able to save us, but even if he doesn't,
we're still not going to bow.
Yeah. He said, "We don't even need to answer you in this matter." Yeah. I'm assuming they said it respectfully. Yeah. But like, this is a guy that literally has murdered probably thousands.
Right.
We know he's murdered a lot of people. He could easily murder you. And what does they basically say, "Hey, look, God can save us. If he doesn't, we're still not going to bow." Like, cause they knew there was something better.
Yeah. We would say it like this. Nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
There's nothing to talk about. Like, yeah. We're going to do what's right.
Do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Like, do what you got to do.
Yeah. If you want to burn us up, do what you got to do.
Yeah.
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 We're still going to do what's right.
Yeah. And those are the things. I remember Scott years ago, he was sitting right there and I think, I can't remember, it didn't matter which episode it was, I don't know, but I remember Scott saying, integrity and is making the decision right now like when you're watching this episode, if you say, "No, I'm going to do the right thing always," then when the situation arises, you don't have to make the decision then. You've already made it.
Yeah.
Like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Joseph, they'd already made the decision that they were going to follow God no matter what. And it didn't matter what the consequences were. They were going to do the right thing. And that's what integrity is.
Well, you know, how easy it would have been. I've heard this said, talking about integrity.
Yeah.
When everyone bowed, what a great time that would have been to fix their sandals or act like dropped something.
Oh, I really was. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Daniel 6, I was thinking about this earlier because you were talking about the contrast between when he was younger and taken to Babylon. But what about just knowing how we reason and think through things? Daniel 6, he's an older man. You know, what if he said, there's nothing in the Torah that says I have to pray 3 times a day? Or I don't have to do it with my windows open.
Yeah, I could do it in the middle of my room. No one needs to see me.
You know, he could. I've been faithful to God all these years. Surely he'll overlook it this one time. You know, Daniel could have reasoned his way out of that like so many people do today.
Yeah.
But if he had done that, I think he would be compromising his integrity.
And think about this. Who would he be compromising his integrity to? Probably himself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, because he would probably be the only one, him and God, would be the only one who knew. Because it says in Daniel 6, something to the effect of as was his custom, right?
Yes, yep. Daniel 16.
So he basically, I mean, I assume to himself, he said, no one else would have known.
Yeah. Right.
Now, the people who were trying to call him out would have known.
Yeah.
And that may be the reason. But Daniel says like, no, I'm not going to change my custom. I have to be true to myself.
Yeah. But even when you look at the first chapter of Daniel 1:8, you know, it says Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's meat nor with the wine which he drank. So Daniel already knew going in.
As a teenager, man. Yep.
Whatever they're doing in Babylon, we're not doing it. You know, you know they say, you know, whatever, you know, whatever happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
That's right.
Daniel said, man, that's not necessarily true in Babylon because God is going to know.
Yeah.
Yep. And since I know that going in, even as a teenager, man, they got to do 70 years in Babylon, in Babylon captivity. Daniel says, hey, however long we're going to be down here, 7+ years, I'm still going to do what's right.
Yeah.
And his friends had the same attitude. And that's the way that we have to be.
Oh, we talked about Job yesterday, right?
Yeah.
In Job chapter 2 and verse, this is what God says about Job in Job chapter 2 and verse 3, right? He says, then the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? Now notice this, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless, upright man who fears God and shuns evil, and still he holds fast to his integrity. And although you cited me against him to destroy him without a cause.
And even his wife in that same chapter.
Yeah.
She said, does thou still retain thine integrity? Like we done lost everything. Yeah. And you still gonna try to do what's right.
Yeah.
So think about those three men. Think about Job, think about Joseph, and think about Daniel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They had integrity. And all three of them suffered because of it.
All three of them.
And what happened to all three of them? What did God do for all three of them?
In the end, they were rewarded.
They were rewarded.
And their lives were made better.
Yeah. Now, I can't promise that in your life that you will always be rewarded for integrity. But I can tell you that it's a real possibility. Because what I see in scripture, I mean, I'm trying to think, of course, you know, Jesus had integrity and he was crucified. You know, Stephen had integrity and he was stoned.
Yeah.
So Peter and Paul had integrity and they were martyred. So I'm not saying that your life will always get better, but in the short term. But in the long term, Joseph became second in command of the world's largest power of Egypt.
Yeah.
Now, would God have risen him to that position if he didn't have integrity? Probably not. Daniel serves the multiple empires, Babylonian and the Persian Empire. Why? Because he had integrity.
Yeah.
You know, Job is blessed more than before, even
Richest
though he
man
went
in the east.
Yeah. Right. And all three of those men have influenced people for thousands of years.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I have to read this. Daniel 6:22.
Yeah.
In the same chapter, after the day is over, King Darius shouts out to Daniel in Daniel 6:20. Daniel, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? And then Daniel 6:22, notice how this relates to our subject. He says, my God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, so they have not hurt me. And then he says, quote, because I was found innocent before him, that's capital H, King of Kings. And then he says, and also, O King, I have done no wrong before you.
Mm.
And so Daniel basically says it himself right there. I've lived right. I've lived a life of integrity before you, King Darius, and the King of Kings. And I do think it's important too, you know, we talk about integrity first and foremost about how God sees us, and that's right and that's proper.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a sense in which it does matter how we conduct ourselves in front of fellow man also.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about the fact like we'll be accused and falsely so, but we do need to be conscious of the way we present ourselves to others.
Yeah.
And like we said, you know, reputation matters. Sometimes we may get a false reputation, but you try to live blameless. You try to live holy. Romans 12:17 says, recompense to no man evil for evil, provide things honest in the sight of all men.
Right.
So as you serve God, you're also serving men. As you live for God, you're trying to live right and proper in the sight of men.
And when you live right, like Daniel, it glorifies God. Over and over in the New Testament, Romans, Titus, it says, you know, basically, you, by your behavior, God's name, his doctrine can be blasphemed.
Yeah. Well, even when you think about Daniel as well as Joseph, because they were men of righteousness and integrity, in Genesis with Joseph, because he was a man of integrity, he was recommended to Pharaoh.
Yeah.
And then when you get to Daniel 4, when none of Nebuchadnezzar's men could interpret a dream or the interpretation, they recommended Daniel.
Yeah.
So because of their righteousness, the world, you know, basically recognized that these were righteous men.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, just quickly, because I know we got to move on, but Job 31 is a huge picture on, if you really want to study this topic of integrity and see what integrity looks like, go read what Job says in Job 31. And I just want to point you to verse 6, right? Okay. He says, Job 31, 6, he says, let me be weighed on honest scales. In other words, you know the famous verse in Job chapter 31, verse 1, right? I have made a covenant with my eyes. Why then should I look upon a young woman? Job says, I have integrity when it comes to sexual purity. So my integrity is there. But notice verse 6 again. Let me be weighed on honest scales that God may know what? My integrity. Mm. And that's what we've been talking about. When nobody else knows your integrity, God knows.
Yeah.
And Job says, and he's not boasting. He's not trying to use his goodness, if you will, to say, oh, God doesn't have a right to do this to me. Mm-hmm. What he's saying is, God, you know. If anybody knows God, you know. Mm. And he's asking, and this I made this point when I preached this sermon on Job, the person of Job. Job says, God, search me. Search me. Right?
Yeah.
How many of us can say that to God?
Yeah.
And how many of us can say that to God and say, God, you search me. And if he does, are you going to be able to live with what he finds?
Yeah.
Because if he can sit there and bring a cause against you, then you better not ask God to search you.
Yeah.
Because when he searches you, judgment comes with it. And you, so
a lot, I think if you, what I take away from looking at like what Job says and Joseph and Daniel is, in our day, many of these spiritual battles happen privately. There's a lot of things that people don't know that you're fighting if you don't tell them. Jealousy, anger, lust, loneliness, pride. We talked about peer pressure, the desire to fit in or cheat. God knows you're fighting those battles, and he understands the struggle, and God wants you, those victories, like God wants you to win.
Yeah.
He's on your side. And understand when you're trying to develop your integrity, you are preparing for the battles that you fight in life. Like you're going to come across temptation later in life.
Yeah.
Right now, when things seem to be, you know, there's no storm, like the waters are calm. Like now's when you're fighting to build your integrity so that when the storm comes, you're able to survive. You know, I think about like what kind of private devotion or teaching from his parents did David have to say, I'll fight him. Who's this uncircumcised Philistine? That didn't happen overnight.
Yeah. Oh no.
You know, Joseph and Job, what kind of lifestyle did they live and devotion to God did they have prior to the battle where they built that character?
Yeah.
You know, so focus on your spiritual time with God. The more, the greater relationship you have with somebody, the less you want to disappoint them.
Yeah.
If you don't ever spend time with God, if you don't ever listen to God and reading scripture, if you don't ever pray to God and talk with him, are you going to be faced with a sin and say like, yeah, I really don't want to commit this great wickedness against this being that I know exists, but I never even give him any time. You know,
yeah.
It's like my dad right now as an adult, I don't want to disappoint my dad.
Yeah.
I'm not really afraid of my dad. Like I was, when I was a child in a healthy way, but like as an adult, now, I don't want to disappoint him because I have a relationship with him. I love him. He loves me. And we need to cultivate the time we spend with God in private devotion.
Yeah.
Because public battles that you face, some of them, Mike, Joseph was a private, you know, I guess it was with another individual, but it was private. But those battles, Daniel was public, you know, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, their battle, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is their Babylonian slave names. Yeah. You know, I always feel like they'd want me to call them by their Jewish name. So those guys fought a public battle.
Right.
But all of that, the reason they survived and they excelled is because their private faith that they built, the devotion they had privately.
And even if, you know, a Christian is struggling with whatever sins or vices privately, you know, one of the things you can't do, because integrity is at the root of, of who we are and what we're talking about. you can't be in denial about it.
Yeah.
Because integrity is going to say, if you're dealing with a private sin and you're struggling with it and it's been holding you down, mm-hmm. it's been a weight, you got to be honest mm-hmm. and say, you know what, I'm struggling with this.
Yeah.
And it's a burden.
Yeah.
And so the Bible tells us, because if you don't, you'll deceive yourself, James 1:22.
Yep.
Be ye doers of the word, not hearers only, mm-hmm. deceiving your own self.
Yeah.
So integrity says, if you are struggling with something, I got to be real and honest with myself and say, you know what, man, this is a struggle for me.
Yeah.
I can't do this alone.
I need help.
And then once I get the help, I can get on the road to trying to do what's right and to continue in that fashion.
Well, just talking about your devotion, your private life, right? Daniel prayed even when it was dangerous.
Yeah.
Jesus often goes alone and prays, right?
Yeah.
Because he's trying to build himself up. And so I think a strong public faith is usually built through years of faithful what? Devotion, right? Faithful, normal.
Absolutely.
And so when you think about that, you don't just become courageous in one single moment.
No.
That's what you were talking about. David didn't just go to Goliath and say, he's never been courageous. He's been a coward his whole life. And all of a sudden, he's just get this spontaneous jolt of courage.
No.
It was built. It was cultivated through a lifetime.
We were talking about the 5-hour energy.
Oh, like, yeah. Like, you know, talk about the jolt.
That's right.
Like he just wake up.
It's not magical pixie dust.
Drink a 5-hour energy and say, you know, I'm ready to fight Goliath.
That's right. Well, these things don't happen overnight or all of a sudden, right?
Yes.
I mean, so all these things happen over time, but also you don't just become dishonest overnight.
Yeah.
That's rooted. You've cultivated true. Whether good or bad in your life. Jesus says you'll know them by their fruits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And every tree that doesn't produce what? Good fruit will be
cut off.
Cut down.
Yeah.
And so we have to cultivate the good.
Right. Yeah.
And if we've been cultivating bad our lives, understand this, that you can, as long as you have breath in your lungs, you can write the
absolutely.
Ship.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You can write the ship.
So absolutely.
Do you think there is a difference? And I like that we're touching on this some. Like, integrity is going to acknowledge you still have mistakes.
Of course.
And I think that's important, just from be patient with yourself and compassionate with yourself, because I think we're too quick to call people hypocrites sometimes and call people out. But there is a difference between, maybe this isn't the best wording, but there's a difference between being a hypocrite and being inconsistent. You know, a hypocrite's somebody who says one thing and they don't have any intent on practicing
right.
that.
Right, that's exactly right.
But like I've used the illustration before, maybe somebody harps on church attendance if they will. You should be there, which we should be there.
Yeah.
But then they miss a Sunday. And maybe they really believe like, yes, you should be there. And when they say it, they mean it and they try. But maybe one Sunday, maybe they stayed out too late and they did something they shouldn't do. They made a mistake. They didn't wake up like they should.
Yeah.
Well, that person's not a hypocrite. Yeah. They fell short.
Yeah.
And we need to be careful before we label people that way.
Yeah.
And that's part of integrity. You're not going to be perfect.
That's right.
But that's the whole point. There's a difference between being perfect and faithful,
right.
which we say all the time, but I feel like we don't do a good job sometimes showing that compassion to ourselves.
Yeah.
Especially as we talk about integrity. Remember, your fellow brethren are just brethren. Yeah. I think it was said, I saw something just this morning, actually, I was reading. I love the way it said it, if I can remember it. Remember that good people are still people, or something to that effect was the point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like to liken it like this. Anybody ever go bowling? Or you like go bowling? Oh, yeah. You ever take your kids bowling?
Never take my kids bowling.
Well, if you take your kids bowling, usually they're going to want to use the rails.
Bumpers.
Right? The bumpers, right? And so it's like, that's what I like in honesty and integrity. Like.
Yeah.
The two bumpers, right? The guardrails that are helping you. And so when you use those, honesty and integrity, then you can bowl that strike.
Score higher, yeah.
Yeah, score higher, right? Yeah. So it's like—
it's all that matters.
That's all that matters, right? It's like, and your kid will beat you and it's like, oh, dad, I beat you. And deep down inside, you're thinking like,
with the bumpers.
Because you had the rails, you know? But it's like, but you build their confidence.
Yeah.
And that's what honesty, that's what, when we do, the more times we do right, in temptation, in trials, what does it do? It builds your confidence. Yeah. I can withstand Satan. Why? Because I've done it before.
Yeah.
And I can continue to do it. So
this goes back to the last lesson we did on fellowship. If you're a young Christian man, if you're a young Christian woman, if you're an older Christian man, middle age, of course, it all depends. You know, when I was 18, I thought 27 was old. Now I think it's, you know, you're young bucks. But the idea is cultivate a community. You've got a community. If you don't have a congregation, email us, authenticchristianpodcast@gmail.com.
Yep.
We help people all over the world find churches of Christ in your area that you can connect with, that you can attend worship. If you haven't been baptized, you can obey the gospel there.
That's right.
But you need to cultivate a community, not just people you shake hands and say, hey, how you doing? Doing great. Good to see you. One time, two times a week. You need to cultivate a community of people that you can talk with. You can share these issues, struggles you're having with. You can devote you can, you know, devote time to. Find an elder at your, that's what happened to me. Yeah. In Raleigh, North Carolina, I wanted to get more faithful. And I went to one of our elders and said, will you study the Bible with me? His name's Adam Hudson. To this day, you know, I don't talk to him as much as I probably should, as much as I'd like to, but we talked, I don't know, a week or two ago. And I said, I want you to study with me. And I went to his house and he just taught me, you know, like find people that can pour into you. And then you pour into the next generation, and maybe you're younger people and you just pour into each other. You read the Bible together.
Yeah.
You, if you're struggling with something, you have people you can share it with, you know, but you need to build a community, because like we talked about last episode, the devil wants to, you know, divide and conquer.
Isolate.
He wants to isolate you. You know, he wants to not have you communicate. He does not want you to have a community.
Yeah.
He would love for you to go to services if you're a Christian, shake hands, sing a couple songs, leave, and never talk to the members of the church the rest of the week.
And feel good about it.
Yeah, and feel good about it. He'd think, that's fine. I can pick him apart. Lord, I'll give him, you get 3 or 4 hours, I get the rest of the week with him. I get TV, I get social media, I get their algorithm. Like, the devil would love to search and destroy and divide and conquer.
Yeah.
Strengthen yourself with Christian fellowship and Christian resources, you know, GBN, you know, World Video Bible School, Apologetics Press, there's Christian Courier. There's so many other good things, you know, good podcasts. Cameron's on Make It Plain podcast. You guys started the Unblinded podcast, Authentic Christian, Counterpoint, Preaching the Gospel, Truth on Wheels, all like, and there's tons of other stuff out there, right? Surround yourself with that. Surround yourself primarily, most of all, first of all, with the scripture.
That's right.
Read the Bible to hear from God, pray to talk to God, and surround yourself with Christian influences.
That's right.
And the more you do that, you start to take your calendar back.
That's right.
Yeah. Now it's, oh, you don't have just 3 hours with God and whatever else with the devil. Now you've got 20, 30 hours a week with God.
Yeah.
And the more, it's like that, what's the old analogy? You have two wolves. You know, you have the good wolf and the bad wolf. You got the God wolf and the devil wolf. And which one wins?
Yeah.
The one you feed. Yep. That's what they say.
Exactly right. Yep.
And so if you feed your spirituality, you draw closer to God, the devil will run from you.
That's it.
But like, if you don't.
Christians will struggle, but they don't study the scriptures, and then they don't pray like they should.
Mm-hmm.
And then they wonder why they're struggling.
Yeah.
If you're not going to study God's word, which gives us all things that pertain to life and godliness, and you're not going to pray. Like the saying is, it's hard to do wrong when you're praying to do right.
Yeah.
So if you're not going to use what God's given us, his word and the avenue of prayer, of course you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
That's expected. That's exactly what's going to happen.
And well, if you say
think about the church, the way that God designed the church, for all the reasons that you mentioned, is like, we understand from a doctrinal standpoint that it's the eternal purpose of God, but practically, everything that you just said in relationship to us helping each other, building a community of belief, support, encouragement, that's the reason why the church exists.
That's the church.
That's it. You know, that's the reason why
God knew what he was doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, they said it at school, right? The church is a community of baptized believers, or a group, they said. But I like to use the word community because community signifies sharing, real connection, and relationship.
Intentionality.
Mm-hmm. So it's a community of baptized believers trying to live and emulate the life of Christ.
And every issue or question that you have, I've had so many times over the years where someone's like, you know, I've got this problem, I'm struggling with this. And they'll ask me and I'll be like, well, what do I want you to do this? They're like, where'd you get that from? I'm like, it's in the Bible. And sometimes they're like, well, the Bible doesn't address this specific question. I'm like, sure, but it has principles, you know, like this person may be struggling with this question. It's like, well, that's not the same exact question, but it's the same type of question this person asked in this part of the Bible. Yeah. This is what they did. And they're like, that's a great idea. You know, it's like,
example, like somebody said, well, God, the Bible doesn't address smoking marijuana. Well, he does without saying thou shalt not smoke marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
It says be sober-minded.
Yeah, yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Be sober-minded. Well, does that fall in the umbrella of drugs, alcohol, and all these other things? Mm-hmm. Of course. So God does address these issues.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And so you can sit there and say, well, I don't find it word for word, but deeper.
It's like just because you don't know it's in there doesn't mean it isn't in there.
That's exactly right.
One man said, he said, man, if God had to identify every specific sin man could think of, like, he's like, man, you know how
yeah.
it would be?
The so world like couldn't you said,
the general
that.
Principle is always there.
That's
in
right.
a way that it covers everything that pertains to life and godliness.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Peter 1.
Guys, man, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for hanging out with us on this episode of the Authentic Christian Podcast. I'm Aaron. This is Cameron. This is Brandon Epifanio. We'll catch you back on the next episode. Thanks for spending time with us. Cultivate integrity, and we'll see you back next time. Have a great day. Thanks for watching the Authentic Christian Podcast. If you want to watch more content like the Authentic Christian, different programs, other podcasts that you want to learn about the Bible, I'd recommend you download our app, the Gospel Broadcasting Network app. Just get on the App Store. You also can find it on Roku, iTunes, etc. Search Gospel Broadcasting Network, download the app, and you can see the show, The Authentic Christian, and many, many other shows, dozens of shows, other podcasts, other shows that walk you through verse by verse through different books of the Bible, or even just different topical shows. So I would recommend you download the Gospel Broadcasting Network app. Thanks for watching.